Hauptmuir goes into teaching and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A little boy was very busy in the woodwork class, and his teacher asked him what he was making. Well, sir, he said, it's a portable, sir.
Portable what? Said the teacher.
I don't know yet. I've only made the handle. You know, education's really a daft process because you spend the first 2 years teaching your kids how to walk and talk, and the rest of your life tending to sit down and shut up.
Now, can anyone tell me the meaning of the word crematorium?
Yes, sir. It's French for dairy.
Now then, when boys and girls do naughty things, do you know where they go?
Please, sir, yes, sir, please, sir. Behind a bicycle shed, sir. One day a little boy took an apple for his teacher and she gave him a kiss. The next day he took a watermelon. After his first day at secondary school, a boy came home and his mother was shocked to hear him use a four-letter word. When she complained, the boy said, "Oh, that's all right, Mummy said Chaucer used it." Well, said his mother, you're not to play with him again. Please, miss, please, miss, can I have a cigarette?
A bit. Certainly not. Do you want to get me into trouble?
Yeah, all right, but I'd rather have a cigarette. Father came home to find his wife very distressed, his little boy crying, and he said to his wife, what's the matter? He said, well, it's in school this morning, wasn't it? He's in the class, and the teacher said, who wrote Hamlet? And our little jaw stumped and said, well, it wasn't me. And the teacher hit him. So I went back there and I got the teacher in front of the class and said, listen, if my boy said he didn't do it, he didn't do it. Father said, is that what you said? You are ignorant. I mean, you must have had them all laughing at you. You shouldn't have said that. What you should have said was, all right, he did it, but he won't do it again.
It's often been said that our school days are the happiest days of our life. But I suppose that really depends on what sort of school you go to.
There were tough kids in my class. There was a kid in my class named Floyd. A black leather jacket, boots, zippers, acne and everything. Floyd used to sit in the dumb row in school. You know, vegetable mentality. I made friends with him years later when we got older. I removed a thorn from his paw. You know? I was on my way for my violin lesson when I was a kid. I was one of those kids who took. And I'm walking past the pool room, and Floyd and all his friends are out. You know, they're swiping hubcaps in Brooklyn for moving cars, which is really amazing. And I walk past, and he yells out to me, hey, Red. I was a cocky kid. Put down my violin. I go up to him. I said, my name is not Red. If you want me, call me by my regular name. It's Master Haywood Allen. I spent that winter in a wheelchair. A team of doctors labored to remove a violin. Lucky it wasn't a cello.
Woody Allen. Now, teaching is a profession which has always had a bad press. I think the reason may be that everyone's been taught at some time in their lives and never quite recovers from the experience. The adult freedom to be abusive about teachers without being put in detention for it has an intoxicating attraction. Mind you, the task of the educator is a thankless one. In the words of Owen Edmond,
education is the process of casting false pearls before real swine.
And the contribution of the teacher isn't always properly valued in later life. Professor B.F. Skinner.
Education is what survives and what has been learnt has been forgotten.
Whatever the precise reason for it is, teachers have rarely managed to command the respect from adults that they demand from their pupils, going right back to Seneca in the 1st century A.D.
It is when the gods hate a man with uncommon abhorrence that they drive him into the profession of a schoolmaster.
Well, this Latin proverb in English, which Erasmus quoted,
he is either dead or teaching school?
Well, that view of the profession hasn't changed much over the centuries. A famous remark from George Bernard Shaw.
He who can, does. He who cannot, teaches.
The qualifications for the job aren't always as exacting as they should be. Here's the view of the character from Evelyn Waugh's Decline and Fall.
I expect you'll be becoming a schoolmaster, sir. That's what most of the gentlemen does, sir, that gets sent down for indecent exposure.
Under this welter of abuse, one cannot but feel sympathy for the poor teacher. Traditionally attacked, traditionally misunderstood, and hard up. The money has always been bad. Dominic Bean.
Then one day they opened a Catholic chapel, which was quickly followed by a pub, a block of shops, and eventually a school. The school went up last because there was no profit in it.
Sometimes there seems to be little profit in teaching. No wonder schoolmasters attempted to make a little extra on the side. Over now to Chiselbury School.
If you don't keep your perishing nuts still, I'll have your ears off.
Bring her, sir! Ow! Ow!
Yes, it looks as though I'll have to get these clippers sharpened or work with an anaesthetist. Never mind, they'll do for now. Sit tight. Now, just a squirt of Jimmel number 5 to bring out the highlight. There we are. All right, young Crombie, that's your lot.
Thank you, sir.
Wait a minute. I have to do the holding up the mirror from behind bit. There we are, sir. How's that?
Oh, crumbs!
I'm sorry I can't help the crumbs. I haven't got a proper barber's sheet. I've only used the breakfast cloth. It's not my fault they're all such messy eaters. And let's see, that's a haircut, friction rub, scalp treatment, 4 and 6 altogether. Just pay Mr. Potter over here at the cash, will you? Take 4 and 6, please, Mr. Teasweezy.
Yes, yes, master.
I'll get the next one. I'll get the next one set up.
Here you are, Mr. Potter.
Thank you, Crombie. Here's your change.
Thank you, sir. Sir, why can't we have a haircut at the village barbershop like we always have?
Well, it's a new idea of the headmaster's. He thinks it's, well, more convenient for him to do it.
Of course it is. Much more convenient all round.
It's so expensive, sir. This is the third haircut you've made me have this week.
Well, you want to be well groomed, don't you? You want to be well groomed. You don't want to grow up looking like Frankie Howard.
No, sir, but...
No buts. I've got you booked for a trim-up the day after tomorrow. By the way, isn't it time you started shaving?
I'm only 12, sir.
All right, then. Just the trim, then.
Yes, sir. Can I go now?
Go? Hey, you've forgotten something, haven't you?
Oh, yes, sir. Here you are.
For me? Oh, that is kind of you, sir. Thank you, sir. Good day, sir. Thank you.
There's Jimmy Edwards and company from the old Wacko. Teachers are traditionally so badly paid that surely they can be forgiven for devising little money-making schemes of their own. Here's a rather ingenious one described in the Daily Telegraph.
With the approval of the headmaster, Mr. C.S. Walton, boys of University College School Hampstead started hymn pools on the line of a football pool. Winners had a forecast hymn that would be chosen for morning prayers on 10 successive mornings.
What are teachers really like? Let's have a few more opinions on the subject. First, from the Marquess of Halifax.
The vanity of teaching does oft tempt a man to forget that he is a blockhead.
And Oscar Wilde.
Everybody who is incapable of learning has taken to teaching.
Now let's hear a more balanced view, an 18th century description of a teacher from Oliver Goldsmith's The Deserted Village.
The village master taught his little school, a man severe he was and stern to view. I knew him well, and every truant knew. Well had the boding tremblers learned to trace the day's disasters in his morning face. Full well they laughed with counterfeited glee at all his jokes, for many a joke had he. Full well the busy whisper circling round conveyed the dismal tidings when he frowned. Yet he was kind, for if severe in aught, the love he bore to learning was in fault.
Where do schools get teachers from? I suppose, like anyone else who wants something unusual, they advertise. Let's hear some ads for teachers. First one from a local newspaper.
School headmaster requires mistress willing to undertake extracurricular activities.
From a daily newspaper.
There are vacancies in the Falkland Islands Education Department for 2 camp teachers uncertified.
And finally, from the magazine Education.
Orpington, boys, master, general subjects, interest in retarded boys and or beekeeping.
And that little list will have shown the demands which are placed on school teachers vary considerably. It really depends on the sort of school in which they end up. Some authorities, like G.K. Chesterton, feel that individual schools don't differ much.
All our schools are finishing schools. They finish what has never been begun.
But others, like Mr. Levy of Church and Gargoyle, scholastic agents in Evelyn Waugh's Decline and Fall, find greater variety.
We class schools, you see, into four grades. Leading school, first-rate school, good school, and school.
I think Will Hay's famous educational establishment, St. Michael's, must have come under the heading of school.
We'll take scripture.
Oh, yes. That reminds me. The other day, you were telling us about Nor.
Telling you about what?
Nor. Nor, yes.
Nor what?
Nor nothing. No. I couldn't tell you about Nor nothing. I must tell you about Nor something, no?
No, just Nor.
Just Nor? Yes. Oh, but not what the mice do.
Not what?
Not what the mice do.
Not what the mice do?
No.
Well, what have the mice got to do with it?
Nothing.
Well, why mention them if they've got nothing to do with it?
I've got to.
Oh, you've got to?
Yes.
I see.
I've got three.
Huh?
I've got three.
Three what?
Marsh.
No. You've got the rest. That's what's the matter with you. Listen, you say, the teacher was telling you about Nor, well, I was. Not what the mice do. They've got nothing to do with it. You've got two and he's got three. Now, where are we? Listen, we'll get this down on paper and then we can sort it out. You take it down, Armitage.
The teacher was telling us about Nor.
About Nor.
Have a look. About what?
About Nor.
Well, why do you put Nor?
It is Nor.
Oh, how do you spell Nor?
N-O-R.
No. K-N-O-R. K, the K is silent, you see? As in soup.
Yes.
But not?
But not
what?
What?
The mice do.
The mice do, yes.
Got that?
Yes.
Comma. Well, you know what the mice do?
No.
They Nor.
Who?
The mice.
I know. Well, show him. He's taking it down, I'm not.
The mice Nor.
Yes.
Well, put it down.
The mice Nor.
Yes. Semicolon.
Which fire?
What?
Which fire?
What do you mean, which fire?
You should put some coal on.
No. Put a semicolon. Put some coal on. It's a gas fire, too, but he doesn't know. Well, semicolon.
How do you spell it?
Spell it?
Yes.
You don't spell it. You splash it. You know what semicolons are?
No.
Well, they're commas with knobs on. Well, we've got that. Come on.
Well, not that Nor, but Nor.
Oh, dear. I don't know who you're talking about.
Nor, the fellow who built the ark.
Built the ark?
Yes.
You mean Noah?
That's right.
Is that who you mean?
Yes.
Well, why did you say Noah?
I did.
No. You said Nor. A different family altogether. Cross all that out, Harbottle. Well, what about Noah?
Well, who was his wife?
Who was whose wife?
Noah's wife.
Who was Noah's wife?
Yes.
You want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
Yes. Well, I think we'll go out to play now, shall we?
No, we might not. Who was Noah's wife?
Well, Noah's wife was Mrs.
I know.
What?
I know Noah's wife.
You do?
Yes.
Well, you ought to. You were in the ark with them, weren't you?
No.
So you tell him who she was.
Noah's wife?
Yes.
Joan of Arc.
The surface hiss would have told you that's a very, very old piece of comedy indeed from Will Hay. Anybody remember the name of the fat boy? Well done. Graham Moffat and the old man, Maude Marriott. Well, now, regardless of what sort of school a teacher ends up in, he's going to face problems with his pupils. There may be the occasional enthusiastic swot who's actually keen on work, but apathy is very common among school children. An observation from Seller and Yeatman, the authors of 1066 and all that.
For every person wishing to teach, there are 30 not wishing to be taught.
Well, that problem remains in every class, be it of boys or girls. The education of girls used to differ considerably from that of boys, but now the two are increasingly similar. Not everyone approves of the trend. Here are a couple of remarks guaranteed to make the blood of feminists boil. First, from Lafayette Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology.
A society in which women are taught anything but the management of a family, the care of men, and the creation of the future generation is a society which is on its way out.
And another from Adolf Hitler.
A highly intelligent man should take a primitive woman. Imagine if on top of everything else I had a woman who interfered with my work.
Might be quite a good thing, isn't it? Even now, though, girls' schools do concentrate more than boys on various aspects of homecraft and domestic science to the benefit of all concerned. Here's an extract from a charity report.
The girls of the school have assisted in the preparation of three hampers for needy pensioners, making the cakes, curd, mincemeat, sweets, etc. themselves.
6 recipients died during the year.
A problem encountered by staff in girls' schools is that of the infatuation of their pupils. It's what used to be called a pash, or crush. No doubt nowadays there's a new word for it, but I'm sure it still takes exactly the same form.
Miss Sweeney, Mama. Her name is Miss Sweeney. She said we could sit wherever we want. I sat right up front and she smiled at me. Mama, she looks just like a movie star. Miss Sweeney did look like a movie star. She looked like Loretta Young. And she wore cashmere sweaters to school. Each one monogrammed with a little M, big S, little A. I'd sit at that first desk in row 3 for hours trying to figure out that monogram. I knew the big S stood for Sweeney, and I just had to know what her first name was, little M, little A. And one day when I should have been coloring Lake Michigan blue, I peeped up and I saw Miss Sweeney reach inside her cashmere sweater. My heart stopped. As I watched the shape of her hand move slowly under little M, big S, little A. I didn't have breasts yet. I was only 7. But I knew that when I did, I would feel about mine exactly the way Miss Sweeney felt about her. That day, I walked her to her car for the first time. What is it that you wanted to ask me, Lily? Is your first name Margaret Ann? How did you guess? It was just a hunch. Could I call you Margaret Ann? Well, I think you'd better call me Miss Sweeney. Yeah, okay.
Well, at least in front of the other children.
See you tomorrow, Margaret.
In my mind, we were friends. True, she was taller. Almost 3 feet. But they didn't let kids wear high heels to school in those days. In class, if I'd speak out of turn, she'd understand. She'd say, "Hold your horses, Lily." And then she'd laugh. I could always make her laugh when I wanted to, and I almost always wanted to. Some days, if she was tired after school, I'd understand. It wasn't easy teaching 30 kids how to read and write. I didn't think of myself as teacher's pet. It's just that I had nothing in common with a bunch of illiterate 7-year-olds.
That was Lily Tomlin. Within any school, the head teacher is in absolute command. In the words of Winston Churchill,
headmasters have powers at their disposal with which prime ministers have never yet been invested.
The job of a headmaster nowadays is not made easier by the increasing amount of violence among young people. Still, a strong disciplinarian can enforce his will by the strength of his personality. Here's a report from the Daily Express.
2 hours after a headmaster gave his 700 pupils a lecture on vandalism, his school in Tottenham was burnt to the ground.
But if all other deterrents fail, a headmaster can sometimes resort to the ultimate, corporal punishment. Though this can be relied on too heavily. J.E. Morpurgo.
Teachers regard tails as more important than heads for the inculcation of knowledge.
Even without the threat of corporal punishment, the first encounter for a young pupil with his headmaster can be pretty grueling.
Come in.
Dr. Klangerfer?
Yes, boy, what is it?
I'm the new boy, sir. Hancock.
Now, come in, boy, come in. Welcome to Greystone. We're going to like it here. Eh, what? Eh?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, how do you know, you young idiot? You've only just got here. Come out and get the cane.
Ah!
You are a lucky and privileged boy to be coming here to Greystone. What are you?
A lucky and privileged boy, sir.
That's it. Speak up. Greystone is the oldest public school in the country. What is it?
The oldest public school in the country, sir.
That's it. Speak up. Greystone has great traditions that you must live up to. What must you do?
I must live up to it, sir.
That's it. Speak up. If you don't live up to them, you want the cane. What do you want?
The cane, sir.
A pleasure. Bend over.
Ah!
Tony Hancock and Kenneth Williams. Well, discipline has to start at the lowest level of school, but there's always a danger that it can get out of hand. Fortunately, there are bodies set up to ensure that that happens as rarely as possible. Report from the Times Educational Supplement.
Surrey's county education officer is to look into parents' allegations that an infant school headmaster assaulted a boy with his artificial leg for turning the wrong way in a maypole dance.
Mind you, a lot of parents are very glad of school because it does at least keep children occupied. John Updike.
The founding fathers, in their wisdom, decided that children were an unnatural strain on parents. So they provided jails called schools, equipped with torches called education.
A lot of parents might agree with that phrase, unnatural strain. Small children can be very wearing. A Freudian misprint from an Ohio newspaper.
It was announced at this time that the final practice for the children's Christmas program will be held on Saturday afternoon between 2 and 3 o'clock.
The school is a very satisfactory way of moderating that hell, but there are dangers. Some teachers are very dominant personalities, and some parents might not approve of their influence. Here's a thought from the character of Ruth Draper's.
Sometimes I think I'll not send him to school, but just let his individuality develop.
Very few small children have many inhibitions about letting their individuality develop inside school, which only goes to increase one's respect for the teachers who manage to cope with them.
Children, pay attention, everybody. Tea time is over, and now we're all going to tell our lovely story. So come along and settle down on the floor all round me. And we've got a visitor today, so we can tell our nice story to her. So, Push, now sit still. What are we going to tell our story about today? Rachel, take your shoe off your head and put it on your foot. Shall we tell it about a little mouse? Or a big red bus? About a dear little bunny rabbit? All right, Peggy, we'll tell our story about a dear little bunny rabbit. No, he wasn't a cowboy, Bunny Sidney, and he didn't have a gun. Now, why don't you come out and help? All right, you stay there, but I don't want to speak again. Stop machine gunning us all. Now then, once upon a time there was a dear little bunny rabbit. And where did he live? No, he didn't live in a tree. No, not in an apartment building. Now think, everybody. He lived in a hole. And he lived there with his money bunny rabbit and his Teddy Bunny Rabbit, yes, and all his little brother and sister Bunny Rabbits. Oh, that was nice. No, Sidney, he wasn't a burglar Bunny Rabbit. No, nor was his daddy. Well, he was just an ordinary businessman, Bunny Rabbit. David, don't wander away like that. Yes, I know the window is over there, but you don't want to look out at it. No. Our story's getting awfully exciting. Now you come back and you sit next to Edgar there. Edgar, don't pull your sweater down over your knees like that. You'll get it all out of shape. No, Lavinia, don't copy him. Never. Look, children, I don't want anybody to pull their sweaters down over their knees. Now then, George, don't do that. Well then, Caroline, you tell us, what was our funny very name? Yes, I know his name was Bunny Rabbit, but what did his mummy call him? Well, I don't think Piggy Bunny is a very good name for a bunny rabbit. Well, because you see, a piggy is a piggy, and a bunny is a bunny, so we can't have a piggy bunny, can we? No, nor a pussy bunny, nor a doggy bunny, nor an elephant bunny. Now, let's be sensible, please, everybody. No, Sidney, I don't think Silly Old Fat Man is a funny name for a bunny rabbit. No, it's not. No, it's not as funny as all that. Now stop rolling about on the floor. Tim, what have you got in your hand? But we haven't had toast and jelly for 2 days. Oh, Tim, where did you get it? In your pocket. Now look, don't touch anything. Now go out of the room, throw it in the waste paper basket, and then wash your hands. Caroline, open the door for me. Now, don't touch anything. Promise you won't... Yeah, hurry up now, because we're going to need you. Come back soon. Now, Hazel, dear, what would you like our bunny rabbit to be called? Violet. Yes, well, I think it is a lovely name, but I don't think it's a very good name for a boy, Bunny Rabbit. No, I think we'll call him Bobby Bunny Rabbit. Well, because that's his name. Well, because I happen to know. Look, we're not going to discuss it anymore. His name is Bobby Bunny Rabbit. Susan, stop kissing Neville, because he doesn't like it. Yes, I know you like it, but he doesn't like it. I don't know why he doesn't like it. No, you can't go under the table and kiss Sidney, because he doesn't like it. Well, you didn't like it yesterday, Sidney. You learn to make up your mind, haven't you? George! Now then, Lavinia, dear, you tell us, what was our bunny rabbit doing? He's riding on a horse, was he? Oh, what a funny thing for a bunny rabbit to do. I expect he was going gallopy, wasn't he? Oh, good, Sydney, I thought you'd like to come and help me. Now, you come and help me. No, Sydney, you cannot go gallopy, gallopy. Sydney, you cannot go gallopy, gallopy like that. Children, never. Come back, everybody. You cannot go... You see what I mean about personality problems? You know, sometimes I don't think love is enough for children.
Superb Joyce Grenfell. And that pretty well concludes our look at teaching. Just a couple of thoughts to close. First, a report from The Guardian calculated to help every school teacher.
The Department of Education and Science has sent a circular to every education authority in the country instructing them how to make holes in walls so they can hang pictures. A wall, the circular adds, is a rectangle with horizontal and vertical sides.
And finally, because some rather harsh things have been said about teachers in this programme, let's hear something that's almost complimentary. An epitaph on a schoolmaster by Robert Burns.
Here lie Willie Mucker's beans, who's Satan when you crack him. Give him the schooling ere weans, but clever Dells, he'll mack him.
Goodbye.
Please, sir, please, sir.
All right, Mark, but hurry up.
Yes, sir. Remember the days that we go to the dark, we used to back a lot of
Frank Muir Goes Into Teaching was written by Frank Muir and Simon Brett and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.
You're listening to Radio 740, CBC Toronto. Now, stay tuned for Toronto's complete radio service, Metro Morning, from 6 to 9 a.m.
Morning. Here is the CBC News. 5 days of peace in the war zone around the Falkland Islands ended yesterday when British forces attacked Argentine positions on the occupied territory. Elements of the task force lying off the Falklands bombarded the garrison and shot down an Argentine helicopter. Harrier jets strafed and captured an Argentine trawler, which the British say was spying. London has denied Argentine charges that the vessel's crew was attacked as it abandoned ship. There's growing speculation that the British task force is preparing for a major assault to retake the colony. At the United Nations, the Secretary General will continue to lead the pursuit for peace today. As Brian Kelleher reports, yesterday's talks produced only guarded statements.
The U.N. Secretary General, Mr. Perez de Cuellar, emerged from his latest round of peace talks at U.N. headquarters last night to report for the second day in a row that progress had been made, but he would give no details.
We have made progress on some points. On some others, I need more clarification.
The British ambassador to the U.N., Sir Anthony Parsons, had two sessions with the Secretary General yesterday, and he said the discussion had been on detailed points, with, in his words, a considerable amount of progress on some points. But he said some very important issues remain to be resolved, and he simply cannot assess the chances for a breakthrough.
It's like driving a car in a fog. You can see 10 yards ahead, and you don't know whether beyond that 10 yards there's a brick wall or sunshine on an open road.
Sir Anthony shook his head when asked if the latest British military actions in the South Atlantic had been talked about. Argentina had earlier protested formally to the Secretary General that Britain was to blame for starting fighting again. Brian Kelleher, CBC News at the UN in New York.
The body of Gilles Villeneuve is due to arrive home tonight aboard a Canadian Armed Forces jetliner. The race car driver was killed on Saturday after his Ferrari touched another car, then spun out and flipped over on a high-speed turn during trials for the Belgian Grand Prix. In Berthierville, Quebec, Villeneuve's hometown, church bells pealed in mourning during the weekend. He was Canada's most successful racing driver, and his aggressive tactics on the track made him a favorite of racing fans. President Reagan's invitation to the Soviet Union for a joint reduction of large nuclear warheads by one-third is meeting with criticism from both Washington and Moscow. The American president made the suggestion yesterday in a speech at his old school in Eureka, Illinois. But in Washington, former Secretary of State Edmund Muskie, a Democrat, says Mr. Reagan should concentrate instead on implementing the recommendations of the SALT II Treaty, worked out by former President Jimmy Carter. And in Moscow, Dmitry Ustinov, the defense minister, said the United States is trying to hide its goal of military domination with what he called pacifying verbiage. Canadian auto workers have again taken their own line away from the bargaining position of their American counterparts, vowing they'll make no concessions on wage or benefits. The United Auto Workers in the U.S. has made recent concessions to the automakers in order to protect jobs. The head of the UAW in Canada, Robert White, told 400.